back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are celebrating our 25th anniversary with our friends at Curio Wellness. We'll be doing the countdown. I swear at some point I'm going to get settled, maybe some extra hotel time in Fort Worth, Texas. I'll take Luke over to Billy Bob's if the Orioles get eliminated on Tuesday night. And I don't think Billy Bob still exists. I don't even know. I don't really care to know. I would like to bring back some Texas barbecue, but other than that, winning in Texas is all that matters. And I guess for the Ravens, winning in London, it's all that matters as well. We're going to be doing our Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery. I'll have some Ravens scratch-offs to give away at Drug City, at the Fountain, upstairs, at the Tasting Room. And either way, I know one thing. My birthday's coming Saturday. I hope I live long enough to get here to 55 years. I hope the Orioles are still very much keeping us active on Friday night in the American League Championship Series. Our friends at Window Nation, 86690Nation at Jiffy Lube, Malty Care, and their Malty locations as well, sponsoring our Maryland Crab Cake Tour, which we're trying to keep alive. I'll have more of them if somehow the Ravens get eliminated. Then we're at Hollywood Casino on Sunday in Perryville for breakfast, brunch, $30 all you can eat. You don't have to pay that. It's not a cover charge at all. You can bring the family up, but if you want to participate also, you can win a lot of money as well as a $500 cash prize as well involved in this. So come on up, eat the buffet, have some French toast. I hope they play better. Luke, I mean, I don't even know how you're doing it. I mean, I even did Billy Joel and Stevie Nicks on Saturday night. I went to New York to see John Mayer last week. I made it to the Queen concert, which thumbs down on the Adam Lambert Queen for me. I even got my Billy Joel and Stevie Nicks field pass. Thank you to Leonard Raskin for hooking me up with seats that he couldn't give away at the end. And I had a great time Saturday night. I did not have a good time Saturday afternoon. I did not like Sunday in iota. How are you doing? How are you? This is weird for you. Teams in London, watching the football team on the little screen. You're at the ballpark. The Orioles are wet in the bed, but the Ravens' loss in its own space was a biblical loss that they're going to walk away a little easier on from all of us because we're on to the Orange Birds again on Tuesday night with the season on the line. But just in a shell, that was as bad a Ravens' loss as there's ever been in a division game at this point in the season where you have high hopes. You're thinking, this is a year Buffalo is going to get nicked up or Kansas City, and we'll host the AFC Championship game here. And then you go and you lay a stinker like that in Pittsburgh.
Well, what you just laid out, starting to talk about Buffalo and Kansas City, to me, you're back to stop with that. And look, we were guilty of it. You and I talked about this last week, how the Ravens were looking like the class of the AFC North. And what happens a week later? Well, they do what they did in Pittsburgh, and Cleveland has the bye week, which, you know, we'll see what that means for Deshaun Watson's shoulder as it pertains to their chances. And lo and behold, the Bengals actually looked a little more like the Bengals on Sunday. And I'm not saying that they're out of the woods with Joe Burrow's calf and all that, but it's why we always say it's a week-to-week league, and that's a crutch to use at times, but who saw this coming? And I know people will say, yeah, well, it's Ravens, Steelers. Yeah. The Ravens beat themselves on Sunday way more than the Pittsburgh Steelers beat the Ravens. I think even Steelers fans would acknowledge that at this point in time. So, look, is it so consequential to the big picture? Look, it's still early October, so we're not going to overreact in that way, but I do go back to what I said in one of our previous conversations where I have real concerns about this team's ability to finish off football games and this team's ability to adjust in-game to adversity. Now, they have done a phenomenal job for a few years now of adjusting during the course of the week to injuries and absences and their preparation from Monday through Saturday. But when things kind of go awry or go sideways in the midst of a game, that's where I question this team. And, you know, in a previous segment, I mentioned mental toughness in some of those situations. I talked a lot about when the Ravens beat the Browns last week, I talked about the difference between that Browns defense and the Ravens defense was that Browns defense wilted when they saw that their rookie backup quarterback couldn't do anything. And they kind of wilted, and then they didn't play as well. This team, and I don't mean the defense specifically, I mean this team across the board, over the last couple years has had a few more struggles than I would like to see in finishing football games, in winning football games that they should have in hand, but they don't, because of turnovers or because of questionable play calls or getting cute or doing something that's just not sound mentally. There's been a little bit too much of that for me. And that's that right there. Let's be clear. That doesn't mean that they're a bad football team either. But that right there, what I just laid out, is the difference between being good, but then having to go on the road in the first or second round of the playoffs, and having the chance to be great, like you just mentioned, as you mentioned Buffalo and Kansas City, and just talking about the big picture of the AFC. What I just laid out, that right there is the difference between being good and having to play on the road in January and having a chance to have home field, for example. So that's where you look at Sunday's loss and just say, okay, I mean, they're 3-2. They're still in first place in the division. I still am not a big believer in the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Browns, tell me what's going to happen with Watson's shoulder. That's such a big question. The Bengals, yeah, they looked a little more like the Bengals, but they're still 2-3, and Joe Burrow's calf is still an issue. So,
and the Ravens still have a tiebreaker, having beaten them on the road.
Yeah, exactly. But when you've now squandered away two games in 3 weeks that you absolutely feel you should have won, and that would mean this team would be 5-0 right now as opposed to 3-2. You know, when we were saying that, we were saying that last year when they were 3-2 and could have been 5-0 at that point in time. So, I mean, that's where you look at that and say, okay, where's the, you know, you have veterans, you have guys who've been through this before. You had guys that you hoped had learned the lessons from last year when this happened early in the season, but it's happening again. Now, it doesn't look exactly the same way, because that was probably, not probably, that definitely was a more defensive driven, whereas the defense overall has played very well for the Ravens. But just in general, in crunch time, in the last 7-8 minutes of a football game, or overtime, as was the case against Indianapolis, they're coming up small when they need to come up big. And, you know, when you do that, you lose football games. This isn't like college football where, you know, it's Alabama or Georgia or whoever playing some FCS school. You know, the talent level is not that dramatic in the NFL, where you let a team hang around in the way that the Ravens let the Steelers hang around when they really had no business being in that football game. Yeah, they'll probably, they'll rise up, or you'll make one too many mistakes and that'll be the difference, and they'll beat you then. So that's what happened. You know, they need to turn the page, maybe in some way, as much as everyone's going to call back to what happened in 17 and going to London and getting absolutely embarrassed by the Jets, to actually get away and kind of be on an island a little bit, and there's not going to be a whole lot of attention on them from a local perspective, obviously, when they're in London, when there's still so much oxygen for the Orioles, you know, at least until Tuesday night. You know, if the Orioles lose Tuesday night, then, you know, we're talking in different terms. But, you know, they've got to find a way to finish football games. And that's what's been so disappointing, because I think everyone sees the potential, even with the offense specifically. I mean, the defense looks legit. And I know Marlon Humphrey got burned, but still, at the end of the day, they gave up, you know, the Ravens gave up 17 points. You'll take that every week, right? I was going to say,
for all their deficiencies and all the problems they have, if Lamar doesn't throw that pass, if Humphrey, if Andrews catches, if Harbaugh and Linderbaum and whatever the hell happened, they kick a field goal there, 3 points would have meant the world, especially when they're getting punts blocked late in the game, right? Would have been 13-8, would have felt a little different, right?
Yeah, no question about it. But as my high school phys ed teacher used to say,
ifs and buts and candies and nuts,
we'd all have a Merry Christmas, right? I mean, that's where it is. And for me, that's just what's so disappointing, because you see the potential, even with the injuries that they've had, and they were healthier on Sunday. Again, they're at a point now where they're slowly but surely getting healthier. But, you know, the drops are, you know, was not something we had seen a whole lot of the first 4 weeks. So that's where I'm inclined to give the pass catchers the benefit of the doubt. At the same time, can Beckham stay healthy? I mean, we saw him on and off the field on Sunday. I mean, at some point in time, it's like, okay, can this guy play or not anymore? Or is this what it's going to be?
And is what he going to do? Take an 8-yard cross, and that's going to be what we get out of him, right? Or, I mean, in any way.
Or you get Lamar Jackson trying to force a pass to him in the end zone that gets picked off. I mean, and I'm not saying that was Beckham's fault, but that connection wasn't there. And that can't happen there. You know, they had to at the very least get 3 points there, but that was their opportunity to put the ball in the end zone, and hey, you go home then. You know, even if it was choppy, you go home with a win then. So, but I'm going to bring up the other name here. I'm concerned about Rashad Bateman at this point. I mean, I really am. And the foot injury last year, he missed time his first year with the sports hernia surgery. But I'm just what I saw Sunday was a guy that is not playing with confidence. I mean, he's just not. And you saw a couple bad, bad drops. You know, at one point he didn't get his arms extended on a deep ball that I thought he had a chance to make a play on. And I'm just not sure. And it's not as though he was heavily involved before he missed the game with the hamstring. So, this is where we come back to all the investment made at wide receiver. I do still have some questions about it. Now, I'm going to give Zay Flowers the benefit of the doubt because he hadn't really looked like a rookie at all in his first four games. He looked like a rookie on Sunday. I mean, he'd be the first to tell you. And I know he talked about it in the post
Well,
game. I
not
mean,
lining up right and costing him a timeout as well.
that falling down on a deep ball where he had a chance to make a big play. I mean, that was not good. But again, that was collective. I mean, Mark Andrews didn't have a good game on Sunday. I mean, Mark Andrews had a ball go right through his hands in the end zone. So it was the cumulative impact of missed opportunity after missed opportunity after turnovers, questionable, too cute with what you're trying to do at the end of the first half, and then your center snaps the ball. That's poor execution, and I question the coaching there of, if your center's unsure, then maybe you don't do that then. Don't do that in that situation. Just kick the field goal. You know what? Because even if you get the Steelers to jump off sides there, you still don't have a whole lot of time to put the ball in the end zone there. So you're still talking about probably not the highest percentage possibility there. So point is, they just had so many chances to make this game not have to come down to where it was in the fourth quarter. And then when it did, and then when you say, hey, there's nothing you can do about what happened in the first, second, and third quarter, this is the game right here and then. At that point in time, just about everyone came up small. And it's a 60-minute football game. I mean, Ray Lewis, how many times have we seen the old NFL films of him mic'd up on the sideline and Ray talking about it being a 60-minute game? This team, twice in 3 weeks now, has not learned that lesson, that it is a 60-minute game. And if you leave a team, even an inferior team, if you leave them in the game, then more often than not, you're going to end up getting your feelings hurt. And that's what's happened now, two out of the last 3 weeks. And a team that very easily, without even playing perfect football, without guys that, all these guys that have missed time over the first 5 weeks of the season, very easily could be 5-0. But you know what? They're not. They're what their record says they are. They're a 3-2 football team that I think still has potential. And that's why when I say this, I'm not down on them in a big picture sense, but at some point in time, got to finish football games. And what is concerning for me is we said the same thing last year, and that was an issue last year. So, you should be growing from those types of experiences. And, we're not seeing that early in the season. And, it's the reason why they're 3-2 rather than 5-0.
He is Luke Jones. He is Baltimore Luke. You can find him out on the interwebs as well, talking football and baseball all week long. You can find me at Hollywood Casino in Perryville. Be there on Sunday morning having breakfast. Also going to be at Drug City on Friday afternoon doing the Maryland Crab Cake towards my birthday weekend. There's some great bands at the Record Theater. I'm hoping the Orioles will be playing on Sunday night. To meander back and forth of football to baseball, is there anything left to say about the Orioles in regard to, just the fan base and the expectation of disappointment? I mean, what we witnessed here on Sunday is a weird hangover, but the Orioles can make it better. The Ravens certainly can go to London and win. I mean, it's different for the Ravens, where it sounds to me like you're calling out the coach a little bit here too, right? It's that, when you start talking about all of these issues this far in, the coach in any other place would be the next guy up for this. The Orioles are going in a different direction, though, if they get eliminated on Tuesday, right? Like, they get eliminated, we're talking about the least. We're talking about them spending money and Henderson and Rutschman and the offseason and pitching and who they're going to have and who they're not going to have. We go into a whole different place. And then the football team takes on all the weight of the world. I mean, we're 9 innings away from that. I mean, the Orioles will take a miracle for the Orioles to win 3 games in a row. Not, I mean, a miracle, but it's been done 10 out of 88 times, according to Luke Jones, our statistician here. But there is definitely a mojo thing going on here where this Steelers-Ravens thing is sliding into the Orioles' real mess. I mean, the Orioles are the bigger fire here, as fires go, but both teams felt on fire on Sunday, and that's kind of unfortunate, right? I mean, because so close to it all working out, and we get all worked up, we sell out stadiums, we have traffic downtown and all of that, but the baseball team's mojo on Tuesday night, the baseball team is the full focus, despite the fact that the Ravens ran a little loose in Pittsburgh and lost one.
Yeah, I mean it's their season's on the line. I mean that's why I said as much as you talk about the Ravens, I mean that being just a loss that brought a lot of disgust, quite frankly, like I said, disgust versus disappointment in how the Orioles played in games 1 and 2. Orioles, their season's on the line. Whereas the Ravens, even if they lose to Tennessee on Sunday morning in London, you're still not talking about, the season's far from over, right? So
Man, if they come back 3-3, whoa, right?
well, again, dependent on what happens with the Orioles. If the Orioles have completed a comeback and won these last three, and we're
Yeah,
talking
right. If
about,
game one's your
then
Sunday
it's a little
night, the
different,
Ravens
right?
could lose 41-0 like they did the last time, and you and I wouldn't have to go out looking for food in Soho after the show, after the game,
exactly,
right?
exactly. But
Yeah.
with the Orioles, look, a couple things here beyond just the fan aspect to this that is, it's very real. I mean, there was so much excitement going into this weekend. And for it to turn out the way it did, I mean, it's just such a disappointment. It's such a bummer, you know? I mean, it not even being angry about it as much as just it stinks, you know? Like this, if you imagine the opposite result and the Ravens win in Pittsburgh and look like one of the best teams in the AFC and look like the class of the AFC North, and the Orioles are up 2-0 right now, can you imagine what that the tone would have been like for that? So it's the opposite. It's where we are at this point in time. It's where the Orioles are at this point in time as they're traveling to Arlington. But, I mentioned for me such a big key, whether it's Gibson or Kramer starting game three, their offense has to start fast. And I know they scored some runs on Sunday, and they even built a 2-0 lead in the first inning. But I'm going to talk a little more about what we saw in game one. Let's face it, this offense struggled the last couple of weeks of the season to score runs consistently. I mean, they scored 32 runs over their final 11 games. And I get it. They had clinched with a few games to go. So if you want to dismiss the last 3 games of the Red Sox series, knock yourself out. I'm okay with that. But we did see it be a little more up and down scoring-wise the last month of the season. We've talked about Mullins. Ryan O'Hearn did not have a great September. You go down the list of some guy, other guys that struggled at different points. So down
Well,
the final few weeks.
Mountcastle not being right after the
Yeah, the
injury, too.
shoulder. Yeah, you had the shoulder. Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot going on. And look, when it's at the very end of the season, the unknown is there, right? Are you tired and worn down because you're talking about some young guys who, especially talking about someone like Gunnar Henderson, someone like Ryan O'Hearn, who's never played this regularly, because of, where he was as a failed prospect in Kansas City. But you go down the list of guys, are guys tired, or is it one of the many ebbs and flows of a season? And if that's the case, if you can have your bats awaken on Tuesday night, you're talking about needing to win 3 in a row. I mean, how many times have the Orioles won 3 in a row this season? I mean, I saw the game notes on Sunday night that were
I would
waiting in my
say
seat.
eight.
It's more than that. In
It is,
fact,
okay.
I'm looking at it right now. I just
Well,
have to
one of the
find.
things is they didn't win 15 in a row to have one of those long stretches that would take out a couple of 3 in a rows. I would say eight, but you're going to come back and tell me it was 11 or something or 12.
The Orioles had 16 winning streaks of at least 3 games in the 2023 regular season.
I gave it 50%. That's terrible, huh?
Yeah.
And I lose that competition.
And I'll go back to this because I cited this before, but I went and I got the exact numbers for you. We all think back to late June and early July, right? They lost 6 of 7, loss to the Yankees on the 4th of July. Everyone's thinking, is this team kind of coming back to earth now? They won a season high 8 in a row after that. Go back to mid-September. They had the, they lost the final game of the Red Sox series at Fenway. They lost those games to the Cardinals. They had lost 5 of 6. They dropped the first two against Tampa Bay. They won 4 straight against the Rays and then the first two against the Astros in Houston. And then even in late September, they dropped 3 in a row. They're still trying to sew up the division. The Rays are still on their heels. They won 5 straight then to clinch the division. So it's what this team has done all year. Now, someone listening right now that's pessimistic about this, and I'd even say realistic about this, to be honest, because it is October. It is different. At some point in time, it's going to come to an end unless they're going to win the World Series, right? There's one team that's happy at the end of
But when
October
you haven't been swept all year and you don't lose series and you're pretty good at home, you have your pitching set up, you're healthier than you've been. The closer can't lose the game until the end, right? So we can talk Batista all you want, but Batista had nothing to do with game one and two or even the setup of how it really would have gone for the most part. And they got here handily, 101 wins, took the last 4 days off, played some pumpkin baseball, as I called it, over the weekend with the Red Sox.
Yeah.
It couldn't have set up better for them. I mean, really,
sure.
Realistically. And I want to ask you this. This is sort of my interruption on this, going to Texas. And I don't think of Texas baseball as being anything inhospitable. Quite frankly, all the times I've gone to Cowboys games down there, I think the Cowboys fans are kind of fraudulent. Like, Cowboys fans are like Mark Messina and people I know, my late buddy Saul, who loved the Cowboys, who worked at Hollybird Sports. Like, Dave Muir, they're guys that live in Parkville that are running around with, Troy Aikman, kids named Troy or Roger, right? You know what I mean? Like, I don't feel that mojo in Dallas when I'm there, that they own Dallas any more than the Stars or the Mavericks or the Rangers. I feel like Texas football or your high school team or your college team, if you're A&M, that's what I always feel anytime I'm in the South, anywhere. I don't feel like the Braves are anybody's number one because they're into NASCAR or they're into their college football team or their high school team or whatever their passion is outside of it. I have a feeling that I'm going to be blown away by showing up there for a kill game for a franchise where they haven't won. The weather's going to be great. Cowboys got their ass kicked on Sunday night, right? I have a feeling that this is going to be this really big moment, right? The Kyle Gibson has seen crowds, right? Have they played a vicious road game, these kids? I'm just asking because they didn't hold up.
Yeah.
Dude, whenever the crowd gets big, 4th of July, Tampa, things get a little wacky for them. They haven't not played great baseball when there's a lot of people and a lot of noise. And I'm not – that's just an observation that I'm looking at it and saying, I want to see them measure up to the moment of the crowd. We talked about the Ravens on Fire Matt Canada Day allowing them to win the game. I mean, it's crazy, right? But the Orioles going down to Texas here, I don't like the way they've responded to the energy that the crowd brought and the noise and nobody was booing Grayson Rodriguez, or at least I didn't. I mean, you were there. I don't know. But, I mean, the football crowd here, I mean, harsh, cheering Kyle Bowler's injury. I mean, I've seen awful stuff happen in our sports fans. The baseball fans and Aaron Hicks, this was brought up in the broadcast, that he was hated, reviled in New York and went to bed every night and, go out and get an apple at midnight and a vendor. Somebody's got a Yankee hat on, looks at him and doesn't, you know what I mean? He didn't have it. They've had a different walk of life here, these young players in Baltimore, because the team were down on Lamar. Lamar's going to get booed before it's over with, right? I don't know if Adley Rutschman's going to feel that anytime soon. Certainly not anytime soon, I would say, right? For any of these guys. But the noise and the crowd, that's something that has struck me about they haven't handled the crowd well. And I don't know what that means for any of them. Brandon Hyde probably going back to Wrigley Field and having that October energy and all that vibe that you felt, hair on the back of your neck and all that. Man, it led to a lot of ball ones, from the pitchers. And guys swinging at pitches maybe they wouldn't have swung at in normal circumstances, trying to do too much offensively, pressing, as John Smoltz would say in the broadcast over the weekend. Just from the side, I think it's going to be a hornet's nest down in Texas for them. I'm wondering if the hair on the back of my neck's going to stand up in that ballpark or not, and whether it's going to feel like Houston feels football-y. What, you know, I mean, I remember the best crowds I ever saw, Yankee Stadium aside, Fenway, you know, whatever. And I've been to 58 World Series games, man. And you know, and they're different than Super Bowls because they're loud. By the time you get to the World Series, it's not an international crowd of golfers and, you know, people on $5,000 junkets. It's always a home crowd everywhere at a World Series game. And I've heard places loud. The Cleveland crowds in the 90s were outrageously football drunken. You know, it was nasty. It was nasty to come into Cleveland and play a baseball game in the 90s, way more so than any other place I've ever been. I mean, some places a little joyous. It's a little rah-rah, pom-pommy. It was a football game in Cleveland. I have a feeling in Texas, you know, Kyle Gibson's going to be dealing with issues and, you know, two out strikes every time Gunner's up with two strikes. It's going to get really ugly in there. It's going to get loud. And I don't know that, I don't think these guys are golfers or tennis players or whatever, but I do think there's something about 23 that I saw Grayson Rodriguez, who's as big as Texas, tough as Texas, you know, all of that. I saw the crowd sort of get after a young man that the next time he'll be better for that. And that's all I can say as a 55-year-old guy, not to creep down on 20-year-old kids out performing, right? But this is how he's going to get his $200 million, is by winning these games and being better in these circumstances. And Jack Morris would say that, Jim Palmer would say that, you know, guys that did it a lot would say that. And Smoltz said that in the broadcast, right? I just, to me, the crowd in Texas and taking the crowd out and getting it a little more quiet, it would be better for these guys than being up with 42,000 people, down 5-2 in the fifth inning, and then it becomes two strikes, sixth inning, seventh inning, eighth inning. And the Rangers, I guess they will do all they can do to you know, avoid their bullpen at any cost and try to get lefty matchups and try to make those matchups happen. But Bruce Bochy does not want to see Wednesday night. He knows. He knows. You know, Tuesday leads to Wednesday, which leads to us having a good time on Friday. And you know what I mean? Like, he's seen this go the other way too. They want to end this Tuesday night.
No question about it. I mean, look, the crowd factor, I don't know. It's impossible to quantify.
But
I
it
mean,
did sound and feel different in the ballpark every
no,
minute of
it
the day
did.
on Saturday, Sunday,
But
right?
I guess my point is, I don't know how much of that factored with Grayson Rodriguez. I mean, I just don't. In the same way that Clayton Kershaw's pitched in front of a ton of big crowds and World Series and all that, and he was awful on Saturday night. He couldn't get out of the first inning. Hall of Fame pitcher. So, but your point is well taken. I think it's going to be an electric atmosphere. They're going to be on the road. You know, they're the heel now as opposed to the baby face, you know, to put it in wrestling terms, you know, with the crowd's going to be popping for their good guys, and the
Well, and
Orioles
they
are
got to feed off of
the
that.
bad guys now.
Gunnar Henderson needs
So,
to hit a three-run home run in the seventh inning when there's with two strikes, you know, in an 0-2 count, or, you know, or 1-2 count where they're trying to get on the edge and guy misses, one of their stinky bullpen guys misses, a lefty, no doubt it'll be a lefty, right? I mean, it'll have to be, right? I mean, like, that's the way Bruce Bochy is going to play this.
yeah, but they only have so many lefties, and I mean, Eovaldi's going to start. He's right-handed, so I mean, I think certainly they preferred the lefties. I still think that narrative is being a little overblown, because go look at the numbers. The Orioles hit left-handed pitching this year. I mean, they did. So I don't think it's. I think it matters for a couple guys, namely Gunnar Henderson, and keeping O'Hearn on the bench. I think that's really where it comes down to this big time, because you know, Adley Rutschman's hit left-handed pitching way better this year than he did as a rookie, you know, when that was actually kind of a thing where he really struggled from the right side of the plate. So that's part of it. But yeah, I mean, the crowd, and this is why I said I think it's of the utmost importance for this team. Take the crowd out of it just for their own headspace to jump out to an early lead, you know, get a couple runs on the board before Gibson or Kramer, whoever's starting, you know, and because they're one starting game three, the other starting game four, presumably, unless something really weird happens. So you know, get an early lead. It does calm the crowd a little bit. I don't think it takes them out of it entirely. I am in full agreement that it's going to be a buzzsaw. I think the Rangers fans are going to be excited, you know, to have playoff baseball there in their ballpark and not hosting it as the, the pandemic year, because keep in mind that's where they played. But
Yeah, they
it's,
opened the ballpark in the pandemic, right? I mean, it's crazy what, right?
So, I mean, it's, yeah, they're going to be fired up. They're, as they should be. Again, it's such strange territory because the Rangers have not played at home since they have choked away the AL West, beat Tampa on the road, beat the Orioles for two on the road. A lot has changed for them since they were last home a couple weeks ago. So that crowd's going to be fired up. There's no question. And yeah, the Orioles are going to have to respond. And you laid out the scenario if it's 5-2. I mean, if they're trailing 5-2, not looking good whether they're playing in Arlington, Baltimore, or on the moon. I mean, that's the reality when you're down 0-2. And if you're trailing in game three at that point in time, it's not good. I mean, that's the Captain Obvious statement. So yeah, I think this is going to be a big test. I'll point this out. And yeah, I know that it's not postseason raucous crowds during, road series in May and June and July, but this team tied the Braves for the best road record in baseball at 52-29. Won 52 road games this year. Now, how does that translate to October? Who the heck knows? But everything we know about this team to this point does lend itself to having some optimism left. A lot? They're down 2-0. I mean, we all know the math there. You got to win three before the Rangers win
Yeah,
one.
this
I mean,
isn't the
it's just.
Ravens going to Cincinnati with Tyler Huntley, right? You know what I mean? And
Yeah.
thinking you're going to beat them in Buffalo and Kansas City.
I mean,
This is about winning on Tuesday night and getting a strong start by, I guess we think it's Gibson. It might be Kramer, whatever it's going to be on Tuesday night. However, this matches up, probably both of them before the night's over, if there's peril, because they're not going back to Webb and Baker and. I mean, they're just not, right? I mean, like, I mean, who is Hyde going to go to with the season on the line? Look, dude, we're 9 years later, 7 years later, talking about Buck Showalter leaving Britain. I mean, that's where we are now. That better not happen again, right?
Well, the problem is they don't have Zach Britt. The problem
Right.
is they don't have Andrew Miller. The problem is they don't have anyone as good as what Darren O'Day was at his best. Talking about Cano right now, as opposed to the Cano we saw the first 3 months of the season. And that's part of the issue here. I mean, and that's why I said when Grayson Rodriguez gets knocked out in the second inning, at that point, I barely even care who they're bringing in from the bullpen because 7 1/3 innings, you just weren't going to navigate that without having to use guys that you don't want to use. It's just reality. It's the simple math of it. So, yeah, whoever's starting, if they can't get you through at least into the fifth or sixth inning, and then if they can't do that much, I don't think they can win unless their offense scores 12 runs. I mean, that's what we're talking about here. So they
How do you
need to
feel
get
about
a.
Eovaldi, by the way?
I mean, Eovaldi, first of all, he's the kind of pitcher I would have loved to have seen the Orioles sign last offseason. Not an ace, but a top half of the rotation kind of guy. They settled on Kyle Gibson. It is what it is.
Hey,
We'll
wouldn't
talk
that be
about that
something if you
plenty.
and I on Wednesday morning have to talk about Gibson beating Eovaldi, right?
Sure. Or we're talking about the opposite and saying, hey, it would have been nice if maybe
And then
Eovaldi
Luke
was on
says,
their
I
side.
told you so on Monday morning, right? Yeah.
Well, and I wasn't, it was a guy like him that I was looking for them to kind of target. But, he did have the injury. He missed time during the season. He had a really good start against the Rays in the wild card round. But if you kind of look since he had come back, he hadn't really been extended a whole lot. This wasn't a guy that was pitching into the seventh inning consistently. So, I think it's going to be interesting. I mean, he should be well rested. So that's something that you don't like from an Orioles perspective, but he is right-handed. And we saw, as much as we've talked about some of these left-handed guys that don't throw all that hard, some soft toss type guys, not that all of them, still throw 92, 93, whatever. But this is a right-handed guy who at his best, even though his velo isn't peak right now because of the injury, but he's the kind of pitcher that the Orioles have actually, I think back to how they completely knocked around Glasnow a couple weeks ago at Camden Yards, in what was such a big game, in that third game of that four game set. So, maybe this is exactly what they need. Someone who throws a little more velo, right-handed. How long Bochy will stay with him if he runs into some trouble, who knows? But
Well, you
they've got
imagine you get
to.
into their bullpen in the third inning, then you start talking about Wednesday night.
Yeah,
I mean,
sure. I mean, and that's what's so frustrating about they kind of what they did offensively against Montgomery is kind of what you hope would happen. It's just you weren't expecting Grayson Rodriguez to get shelled and knocked out in the second inning, and then you're having to pitch guys like Brian Baker and Jacob Webb early in the game because, you know, who the heck else are you going to throw? Because, yeah, you go through your best guys, then, okay, those bad pitchers then or those lesser pitchers are then pitching later in the game because someone's got to pitch. So just wasn't ideal. See what happens. Win Tuesday night. You try to win Wednesday night. You win Wednesday night. You come home and, hey, you're feeling really good. It's a new season. It's a one-game season then. It's that simple. So the Orioles winning two straight road games. You know, we talked about that three-game winning streak, you know, factoid. They won two on the road a whole lot this year. Now, never under this pressure, but it's far from impossible to do this, even if, yeah, the Orioles are very clearly the underdog at this point, being down 2-0.
Baltimore Luke's the way to find him. You can find both of us in Texas for Game 3 coverage at Baltimore Positive. We'll be at AM 1570 as well, getting it done. Friday morning, Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery and Window Nation and Jiffy Lube. We're going to be at Drug City at the Fountain upstairs, celebrating 55 years on the planet for me. Get a big boy milkshake. Hopefully it's celebratory and looking forward to Game 5 at Camden Yards on Friday night. And, of course, the Ravens in London on Sunday. We'll be at the Hollywood Casino in Perryville for breakfast. Fun, festivities, giveaways. Come get a free copy of Purple Rain 2. Come have some French toast for breakfast with me. I might drag Luke with me. I don't even know. We're going to figure it all out. But it's going to be a good time up at Hollywood. Great, great view of the game. I mean, the televisions in there are amazing. The food's great. Get me a little salmon BLT for breakfast. I'll be fixed up right with a Bloody Mary. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking Baltimore positive.